And welcome to Gravel Talk, ladies and gents. Thank you for joining us.
Well, this week in the Spotlight and Squirt Circle, we are sitting down with
Greg Gagne, the son of Vern Gagne.
We're sitting down with Larry the Axe Henning.
We're sitting down in the Spotlight and Squirt Circle with Ryan Owen,
Darren Corbin,
Zach Gowen.
We're sitting down with Dick Justice.
You're listening to Gravel Talk, keeping you up to date on the Midwestern independent wrestling.
And we are live!
Welcome into Gravel Talk, ladies and gents. It's episode number, 102 now?
It is 101.
101.
First episode of 2016.
First episode of 2016. My name is Nick Ragnar, joined by AC Riley, Jesse Von Rubin,
hey,
as always. Guys, big show today, so why don't we just kick things off with the upcoming shows.
Here are some featured shows.
Alrighty, so I will kick things off with IWA Mid-South presenting Out with the Old, In with the New. That's this upcoming Friday, January the 8th at the Coldgate Gym in 230 East Montgomery Avenue in Clarksville, Indiana. Now, if you're going to be hitting up the show, you got quite a bit to look forward to. The card will feature a world title match as the champion Kongo Kong with Randy West will take on the Hood Ninja Isaiah. Also, a TPI rematch, the Iron Demon Shane Mercer takes on Money Matt Cage. Hoss Battle, the former Ring of Honor world champion, Unbreakable Michael Elgin, takes on Destroyer of Worlds, Russ Jones. Former WWE Tag Team and Intercontinental Champion, Badass Billy Gunn, will be one-on-one against the leader of the Bomb Shelter, Joseph Schwartz, who will be accompanied to the ring by Thunder Kitty. Lots and lots of other matches. I'm not going to go through all these because there's just so much. All you need to know is it's an action-packed show, tons of matches, definitely getting your money's worth. For IWA's Mid-South show, tickets are $35 for floor, $25 for general admission for both, I don't know, 1/8 and 1/9. I don't know what that means.
Oh, Friday the 8th and Saturday the 9th, they got a doubleheader.
Most likely makes sense. Single night ticket would be $20, so obviously getting your value's worth if you just get the $25 or $35 package. And the only way to guarantee front row is to buy in advance, so get your tickets via PayPal at bestmistyever@gmail.com. Not sure what that has to do with IWA Mid-South, but there you go. So if this episode is edited before Friday, try to get your tickets early for IWA Mid-South's Out with the Old and In with the New.
This Saturday, Funky Monkey Wrestling presents Over the Top at 6.05 p.m. at the Latin American Social Club. That's 2708 West 4th Street, Sterling, Illinois. Of course, with the name Over the Top, there is a Over the Top 30-man rumble, and in order to determine the number 1 and number 30 spots, they'll be having their annual Over the Top arm wrestling contest.
Oh, yeah, like the movie Over the Top.
Exactly. So this year's contestants will be Zeke Shi, The Wrestling Zen, and Moondog Bernard. So I'm assuming that if one of them wins, they get number 30, the loser gets number 1. So, I mean, here's hoping that's not a terrible, you know, arm wrestling match where you just throw out your arm just from the sheer power of the other guy. But I don't know. That was a swing and a miss for me. Another match announcements are Judd the Jander and It's All About Mean, which is the team of Christian Rose and Malachi Matthews, taking on The Family Business, which is Dixie, Houston, and Beck.
What, like the musician Beck?
Not the musician Beck. Mason Beck, I believe, is his full name. The Electric Animals, which is Harvey Bauer and Wolf, taking on Swag Dog Millionaires, which is Moondog Bernard and Garrett. J.J. Garrett, excuse me. So, yeah, looks like Moondog's going to have a busy doubleheader night. Marcus Crane takes on Maxwell Chicago, who takes on Dan the Man, who takes on Adam Grace in a Fatal 4-Way. And the match that I'm personally looking forward to of the night, Matt Cage will be taking on Brock Hall. I mean, we, you know, doing the Midwest Wrestling Podcast, we definitely follow a lot of, you know, Midwest talent here in the area. And Matt Cage and Brock Hall are, you know, some of the names that usually stick to the top, you know, especially in the area that we follow. So looking forward to that match especially.
Well, a lot of the guys that show up on a lot of these cards that we've been doing for the last 2.5 years always seem to keep on popping up and popping up, and for good reason. There's a lot of really good talent in the Midwest.
Absolutely. It's going to be a great show. You can get your tickets for $10, or you can get an 8 in advance at some of the opportunities at some of the stores that they're selling pre-sale tickets for. You can check out Funky Monkey Wrestling's Facebook page to get a full detail of what stores will have those events tickets. Still $10, though, really not asking a whole lot for a great show. So check it out, Funky Monkey Wrestling, Over the Top, this Saturday in Sterling, Illinois.
So I can get tickets at a local convenience store down there.
I mean, you very well could be. It could be one of the stores they're offering pre-sale tickets.
So like a come and go. I could get my tickets to Funky Monkey at a come and go.
You could come in for gas and go with tickets.
Nice.
All right, cool. Underground Wrestling is back this weekend as well with Undisputed. Of course, that'd be Saturday at 7 p.m. at the Underground Wrestling Academy at 270 West North Avenue, Unit 21 in Villa Park, Illinois. All right. Doors are going to be opening at 6:15. Show's going to start at 7 p.m. Tickets are $10 for adults and $5 for kids 12 and under. So that's always a pretty good thing there, you know. It's going to be a pretty cheap night, too, if you want to take out your whole family. Of course, they're going to have the Underground Wrestling Independent Championship in a five-man scramble match. Gary J., Mason Conrad, the Survivor Barry Wright, the Fire Lord Draconis, and Prince Mustafa Ali will do battle. One of those men will be walking out with the championship gold. Of course, the tag team title is on the line in a no-disqualification tornado tag team match as Team Glitterbond will be taking on the Will to Win. Of course, you're also going to see the Church in action as they take on the Submission Squad. GPA, we take on Everett Connors, and Overlord, we take it on Kuni Selinsico. And wow, they actually got a picture of these two guys, and you want to see these two guys. They're really kind of cool looking. I kind of want to go down
there.
They do
look pretty cool.
They're really cool looking. They look like, you know, the straight up luchador action figures, but that's a pretty good show with Underground Pro Wrestling. You want to make sure you check that out if you're down in Villa Park. And of course, these aren't the only three shows going on this weekend. There's a lot going on this weekend, actually.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of shows happening this weekend, especially on Saturday, of course. You can check out Facebook. We'll have all the shows posted either Thursday or Friday. You know, more likely when you listen to this podcast, they'll have all the shows posted, and you can check out what's happening on in your area.
Yeah, I know. We're going to go up to First Avenue for Wrestlepalooza on Friday. We're looking forward to that one. And maybe we'll stop in some other shows this weekend. Who knows?
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting time. I mean, Wrestlepalooza, the last Wrestlepalooza we went to, oddly enough, was a year ago in this time frame. So, I mean, it'll be exciting.
Was it a
time.
Year ago? It almost felt like 2 years ago.
It might have been 2 years. I think it's 2 years. But still, like, we went to the January Wrestlepalooza is what I was trying to get to. Last time we went was a good time. And I think it'll be an especially good time this year. Card looks stacked. It's going to be a good time. I said good time a lot. I just realized that. And Wrestlepalooza has got a double header.
You're looking for a good time?
Are
you good time AC Riley now?
Good time AC Riley. Yeah. Maybe.
Whatever,
no.
You back in your Cadillac giving you a good time because my name's AC Riley. Good times.
But I think what's great, too, is that not only are they just going to, you know, First Ave like they always do, but, mm-hmm. you know, for the first time they're going to Des Moines, Iowa. So they have a double header on, you know, Friday and Saturday. So that's. That's great that they're, you know, just on the up and up, so looking forward to that.
Cool.
Cool. Cool beans.
Yeah. A lot of crazy stuff happening in wrestling, but, you know, we're kind of strapped on time this week. We got to sit down with Ben McCoy, and, man, that was a great interview we had with him.
It was a very great interview.
Very good interview, something that I think that we've never had the chance to do here on Grapple Talk before. It's very real, very, very deep stuff that we talked to him about, so, you know. Probably be a first time that you'll ever hear something like this on Grapple Talk, so definitely stick around for it and listen to it, I guess.
Kick it off 2016 the right way, right?
Sure.
Sure. What music are we listening to, you know, going into the break?
I don't know.
All right. Jesse, you got any suggestions?
What's that song about people farting?
What?
It's got to be like...
What music do you listen to when you're working?
A lot of different stuff, man. I mean, what do you listen to when you work out besides like Five Finger Death Punch?
I actually don't listen to a ton of Five Finger Death Punch when working out.
No?
I definitely don't listen to songs while people farting.
You just listen to Mozart when you're working out?
Not Mozart either. I usually...
All right.
Stick around for more Grapple Talk. Ben McCoy on the way.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Darren Corbin. I've always gotten the question, why do I not do my own podcast? Well, I've branched out and I've tried to do Wrestling Reflections and the Wrestler's Brewing Movie Letter, plus my promos that I flood your feed with all the time. And the number one reason is, when it comes to podcasts, everyone can always find a way to hear myself talk, and there's numerous podcasts out there, but I want to give my endorsement to one very special one. And that'd be Grapple Talk, that covers a lot of the Midwest independent wrestling highlights. See, a lot of the local Midwest wrestlers are the spotlight of the Squared Circle hosts. And that would be Nick Ragnar, Jesse Von Rudin, and AC Riley. And every week on iTunes or Podbean, you can catch their podcast. So I just want to give them a shout out. So if you're asking me why I don't do podcasts and you're maybe looking for my opinion, check them out for all your podcast needs and take a look and keep supporting independent wrestling in the Midwest.
This is the Monster of the Midwest, Sadist. There's a couple of things I really, really like. I like to hurt people, and I like Grapple Talk. So I'm going to keep listening.
Hey, Grapple Talk listeners. This is Chris from Spot Monkey Media. Are you a professional wrestler, a promoter, a business owner? Spot Monkey Media is graphic design for the wrestling professional. We offer design services for t-shirts, event posters, 8x10s, logos, and even ring gear. But if you're not in the wrestling business, we work outside the ropes. Go to spotmonkeymedia.com for more information. Spot Monkey Media, create your legacy.
Hello, wrestling fans. Colt Cabana coming to you live from the 1 Hour Tease Arena in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. The pro wrestling action has been great so far. As you can see, Joey really dominating the ring so far. There's a beautiful belly-to-back suplex. And looks like Joey's shirt has been ripped.
What's up with that? You ripped my shirt.
Let's go check an instant replay, see exactly what happened. There you can see Joey's shirt ripped from the collar, and that's not good when you're trying to wear your pro wrestling t-shirt.
Man, you ripped my shirt. It's my only shirt. Joey.
Hey, looks like Ryan from 1 Hour Tees just threw Joey Ryan a brand new t-shirt.
Thanks, Pro Wrestling Tees.
ProWrestlingTees.com, over 3,000 wrestling t-shirts designed and sold by pro wrestlers. Wrestlers such as Steve Austin, CM Punk, Macho Man, Mick Foley, DDP, Andre the Giant, Jake the Snake, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Scott Hall, Ted DiBiase, Colt Cabana, Joey Ryan, Cliff Compton, and the entire Bullet Club. All stores owned by pro wrestlers. Support pro wrestling today and visit ProWrestlingTees.com.
You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Everybody loves Nathan Gust.
Keeping you up to date on Midwestern Independent Wrestling.
It sounds stupid coming out of my mouth.
And now, the moment you've been waiting for. It's Spotlight in the Squared Circle.
This week in the Spotlight in Squared Circle, we are sitting down with Ben McCoy, part two of his interview. We had the set a couple weeks ago, Jesse and Nick, but, you know, the road isn't exactly the favor of the cell phone. So.
Weeks ago, man. That was a couple months ago.
Yeah, a couple months ago?
Yeah.
That was last year, man.
That was this fall, or right before the fall. I was on my way to my brother's wedding, actually.
It's like week three of the NFL season.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
Yeah. Well, we're finally getting a chance to sit down with you, Ben, and you're not on the road. You're back at home, so hopefully no service will be dropped in this interview. So, Ben, thank you for joining us for the third time.
Hey, yeah, no problem. Hopefully this goes better than the last one.
So, Ben, when we cut off from part one of two of the interview, we were talking about, you know, Army and wrestling. So really just to, pick up where we left off, man, just, regale us with your tales of Army and wrestling.
Well, I think the last thing we talked about was I was kind of coming to the winding down stage. I want to say it was May of 2010. I finished up all my, I kind of before then even knew that the writing was kind of on the wall. I want to say it was about February of 2010. And I had been in for 5 years at that time. And it wasn't that I wasn't passionate about anything. I was actually doing better than I had ever done before. I actually won my first heavyweight title, and I really was kind of feeling like I was getting to roll on. But at the same time, I think the constant grind and going everywhere and trying to take every match I could, while still being at that time, I wasn't even married for a year yet, and then with two kids, which is not what I was used to, obviously. It just kind of wore on me, and I just remember waking up after a wrestling show. I think I went down to Illinois and I did a show, and I came back, and I just remember the next morning being home and just like not wasn't happy. I had a good, and I didn't know why. I was happy with the match I had. I was happy with the crowd. I felt like everything went well, and yet I just wasn't happy, and I didn't know why. And it just kind of kept building and building and building, and. So I remember I was sitting on the couch with my wife and the Army commercial came on and I asked her about if she thought I should go do that. And I kind of said it jokingly and she looked at me and was like, you could absolutely do that. You'd be great at that. And it kind of shocked me because it was never really in my plans. I mean, I come from a military family. My grandfather was a World War II veteran. My dad was in the Navy during Vietnam. I have a brother-in-law who is not only an Afghan vet, but an Iraq vet. And, his brother is also a Marine right now, still serving. And, it was just kind of, but for some reason for me, it never really factored into my plans. After I talked to my wife, we went to the recruiting station that was in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And I met an awesome sergeant. Shout out to Sergeant Stuckert. That guy was awesome. And he kind of helped me get on the path. And I remember everything was done, and I had went and I had signed all the paperwork, and literally the last thing I had to do was go in and sign. And I knew that I had about 4.5 months until I would go to basic training. And I figured I would be able to, you know, kind of do everything that I wanted to do and get out in time for it. And I hadn't told anybody yet. I hadn't told any of the wrestlers or anything like that. And at the time, I was helping with a company called NWA Unleashed, which is in Fond du Lac. And things kind of went south there. That partnership dissolved, which only added to being bitter about wrestling. And then another thing happened, and I mean, it just, stuff got heavy. I mean, I don't know how great it is to get into it or not, but stuff got heavy, and I guess, you know, people who I thought were my friends turned out not to be my friends, and at that time, in my opinion, that's kind of how I felt. And I just remember saying, you know, if they're going to, you know, if this is the way it's going to be, and if I can't gain the respect now, they're never going to respect me, so I might as well leave. And I had a lot of help though. Chase was really behind me, and you know, he's like, "Don't go, but if you do go, you know, I love you and I wish you the best." And I had a lot of guys behind me with, you know, understanding. I don't want to say that they were excited for me to go, but they were understanding in my decision and the fact that I was trying to do what was best, not only financially but security wise for my family. And you know, I just remember we got down to it. I finished up my dates. I had a great my last two matches. I got to wrestle Chase in a brother versus brother loser leaves town match up in Green Bay, and that was, you know, awesome and really fun. And then I got to end my career wrestling in ICW for the heavyweight title, the belt that I had never won. And I wrestled Troy Walters, who's to this day one of my favorite guys to wrestle, and wound up beating him for the belt on the last night and kind of got sent off into the sunset. Didn't know that was going to happen because I was told that something else was going to happen. And it was just kind of nice. And, you know, Dysfunction was always really behind me with everything. He hated me leaving too, but they were all really behind me with doing stuff. So
let's talk about your experience then, I guess, moving forward, just kind of staying on this timeline. So you joined the Army, I guess. So how long were you in? I mean, what was that experience like?
I was in the Army for 4 years. I went in August of 2010, and I went through basic training at Fort Benning, Georgia. And I had a good time doing it. I joined the infantry, and I was really happy with my choice of field of work. And, you know, I just remember thinking it was kind of easy for the transition because the brotherhood is very similar to wrestling. I mean, guys play the same kind of stupid practical jokes on one another. And, you know, there's the same kind of like lingo and camaraderie and kind of like, you know, everybody's kind of there for each other. It was a good time, and I remember I graduated basic training, and I wound up getting my orders, I think it was the week before I was graduated. And when I got my orders, they told me I was going to the 10th Mountain Division, and I was really excited because it was in New York, and I had never been to New York, and I thought that's where I was going. And then I was, I remember one of my drill sergeants went up to me and laughed because he was like, "Hey, I heard you're 4th Brigade, 10th Mountain." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm excited, New York." And he was like, "Yeah, that's not where you're going." And I kind of was like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "You're going to a place called Fort Polk, Louisiana." And I was like, "Fort what?" And so we went in there, and I remember I TCS'd and went out to Fort Polk, Louisiana. And it is quite literally in the middle of a swamp. It is in the middle of nowhere. The nearest Target store is about 60 miles away. And the two towns that are next to you are these really, like, run-down, small, I don't want to say low-class, but we'll go with blue-collar kind of towns. And
low-income actually works as well, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and they were you know, they had a Walmart, and that was about it, and it flooded a lot, and it was always wet and rainy, it was a good time for a little bit. But I was only there for 2 days, and I found out I was getting orders to Afghanistan. I'd flown down there. I got 4 days off for leave after I graduated basic. Got to my desk, had Thanksgiving at home in Wisconsin, flew down to Atlanta, connected from Atlanta to Louisiana in Alexandria. When I got to Alexandria, caught a ride with some random staff sergeant who I never saw again. He took me to Fort Polk and went there. I was a day early, so they kind of got all my stuff ready for the next day. And then when I got all that done, I went to my first class the next morning, and they handed out papers, and all of a sudden this guy came in and called off names, and I was one of the names, and he wound up giving me this envelope, and I looked at the envelope, and it said, specific orders, and I opened it up, and sure enough, it said, you're going to Afghanistan on January 24th of 2011, and that was that. I called my wife the first chance I had, and I let her know, and then obviously, being infantry, it's a combat MOS, so you're going to, you're going to see action, and there's going to be, and I don't think I was ever really prepared for it. I think it was one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, of course you're going to see combat, whatever, but I don't think there's ever a specific way to kind of be ready for that. And, anyways, I got done, and when I got done, I went and I, had a kind of like a last meal with my wife and stuff a couple weeks later before I left. And then I remember we went and kind of said our goodbyes. And when we got to done saying our goodbyes, we went to a ceremonial thing. And then they flew us out, or they drove us out to Alexandria on a bus. And then we caught a flight to, Bangor, Maine. And then I was in Germany after that. Germany, we connected to Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan, we connected to Kuwait. And then Kuwait, we connected to Afghanistan. So I was there in about 3 days. And then I got assigned my company. And the rest is kind of history. Then it was just Afghanistan.
All right, so I got to bring it back a quick second. What was rougher on the body, training to be a wrestler or just boot camp?
Oh, my God. The Army is way harder.
Okay.
Oh, sweet Jesus. With training with wrestling, it's one thing, but... you got to remember, the training and wrestling, you're being taught a skill. There's an art form to it, and they're really trying to make you learn. Mm-hmm. The Army, the first 2 weeks, they have a thing called, you have phases in basic training. Your first 2 weeks are red phase, and red phase is basically them just trying to destroy you every single day. Quite literally, I have no other way to put it. I remember the first night we were there, when I first got there, I was up for 52 straight hours with no sleep, and... they made sure of it, and they just you said you're giving you all your gear, and you're giving all your shots, and you're doing all these tests, and then that's not even basic. That's just at reception, and then you finally get some sleep for like 2 days, and then they send you down range to basic, and then when you get to basic, I remember the first day we were there, they call it getting smoked, and basically that's getting kind of physically trained by the Army, I guess, but they call it getting smoked or getting scuffed up. And, we got smoked for the first 2 hours we were there, and just, to the point where guys are hurling and passing out and, falling over. And then they sent us to our barracks. They let us put our stuff away. They smoked us again. We ate something one time that day, smoked us again. And then they put us to bed at like 9 o'clock. I remember I wanted to get all my stuff nice in my locker, and I wanted to put my lock in my locker and make sure nobody would mess with it. And so I kind of took a little bit of extra time to get that done, figuring I'd have the night to sleep and wake up at 4 a.m. I remember I crawled into bed, and it was like 9:20, and about 5 minutes later, not even, they turned on the lights and woke everybody up. And we were informed that we were required to get 4 hours of sleep, but absolutely nobody said they had to be 4 consecutive hours of sleep. So they proceeded to wake us up with a fire alarm drill every half an hour for the entire night. And that's just the first day. That's like your welcome to it thing. So over the next 2 weeks, they basically beat the living tar out of you. You only eat when they tell you to eat. It's very, I don't want to say it's prison-esque, but it's pretty close. I would actually say there's a little more structure to it, but it's definitely intended to break you. And I think that's when we lost the most guys. A lot of guys quit, and some guys physically kind of hack it. And it was interesting times.
Ben, obviously, you know, everybody from here at Grapple Talk, we just want to say thanks for your service. I think that needs to be said. Very commendable having the responsibility and just really everything else that comes along with being in the Army, especially being in infantry when you're in Afghanistan. I know this is a wrestling podcast, but we never really have the opportunity to talk to somebody about an experience like this. You know, I mean, being over there, you know, what kept you going? I mean, what made you get through every single day?
Oh, my wife and kids, man. I mean, that literally was the main thing. You think about all the stuff you want to get back to. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like going into exile and knowing that the only way you can get back to everything you loved is to get the job done, kind of a thing. And, you know, being out there, I've never, I don't know, I guess in my opinion, I think it's the closest thing that the planet has to offer to hell. In physical form, and I just remember it being so just like desolate and pretty much like a wasteland. I mean, I can remember the ground being flat for miles until you couldn't see anything, and then the flats would end, and there would just be these mountains that would go so high that you couldn't even see the sun on the other side, or you know. It was a very different kind of terrain and different kind of feeling to it. You know, people living out of the side of mountains and caves and huts. And I can remember going on my first patrol. We had 3 feet of snow, and it was so white. It was almost like one of those things you see on the TV show where it's a completely white room and you can't tell where the floor is and what the walls are and where the ceiling is. It's all just white. And that's what it was. And I just remember guys falling over all the time because there was so much snow and there was complete ice underneath it and you couldn't see where you were going. I fell like 9 times, you know, and this is my first patrol, so I'm not making the best impression because I keep falling over, you know, and you got about 75 pounds on you and you're walking around. And, you know, I just remember going into our first village, the village of Syedabad, and walking past this family, and I remember I looked, we were kind of doing a village assessment, we were looking through houses and stuff, making sure that nobody was doing anything stupid, and I remember looking through this doorway, and this family was cuddled in this corner, and they had no roof, and they had a fire, probably, I don't know, if you put your arms out and made a circle and had your hands touch, the fire was about that big, and it was barely any wood in it. I mean, it was very, very low. And they were all huddled in the corner with no blankets or anything, just literally huddled against each other. And there was a man and a woman and about 3 kids and a baby. And they were all just huddling together, holding each other. And I just remember looking at it and being so taken aback that I had no words. I almost lost concept of where I was because I had never seen anything like that. And I remember my buddy walked up to me and kind of tapped me on the shoulder and was like, "Hey, we got to keep going." And he had been there for a few months already. So he was kind of, this was a thing he's seen a lot. And I just remember that always kind of stuck with me. Even to this day, it sticks with me. It's one of those images that I don't think I'll ever get out of my head. And it was hard because, you know, you're sent there and you're told these are the enemy. This is the people that you're supposed to, you know, watch out for. And it's hard to remember that they're not all bad, and it's hard to even think that, especially when your sole purpose of being there is to get the bad guys. And it was just really strange because here you get put into this frame of mind and this motive. I am going to go over here. Whoever gets in the way or whoever does something stupid, I'm going to put them down, and that's going to be the end of it. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to let them take anybody's lives or hurt anybody. And you almost forget that the people they hurt are their own people, you know. And being there, it's not like a Vietnam War or Korea or World War II or anything like that. You know, there's no line where in the sand where, you know, these guys are on one side, we're on the other side, we're going to charge towards them, they're going to charge towards us, and whoever's the best is going to be left standing. It's like fighting a ghost out there. You know, the Taliban pays the farmer to shoot at you, and then you catch the farmer, and then the farmer's like, "But if I don't shoot at you and take the Taliban's money, then they destroy my crops and they kill my cattle. And then my family dies and I die." And you'd be surprised just how much that happens. And then yet the people who want to help or try to help sooner or later get turned on you. I mean, I can remember we got hit by a suicide bomb inside of our cop. And when we got hit with a suicide bomb, it actually injured 63 of my guys. It was about 2,000 pounds. And it was perpetrated by a jingle truck driver, which is basically a driver who drives in trucks with either canned goods or, you know, there's a truck that comes in and empties out the porter potties or whatever that, you know, they kind of have their jobs, and we call them jingle trucks. And this guy had come onto our cop for the last 4 years, never had a problem with him, never was in the system as being a terrorist or anything else like that. And one day decided that he was going to drive his truck with 2,000 pounds worth of bombs on it to blow up as many people and kill as many people, including himself, as he possibly could. And that's, and it's the hard part. That's why when you are there and you see stuff like that, family, it's, you almost have to, like, you have to force yourself not to connect. You have to force yourself to kind of disengage and not have any emotion, because the second you have emotion, you give them a window of opportunity to do something. And it's a very hard place. It's a very weird feeling to wake up in the morning and know that the majority of the country that you're in right now want you dead. So
I mean, you were serving for 4 years, and obviously with, you know, serving in the Army or the military, there's obviously the risk of hazards. I mean, there's a risk of not even being able to make it home. But I mean, you took a bullet, and I got to ask, I mean, how are you even alive after taking a bullet in such a, you know, a fragile area?
It hit me in the face, actually. It actually hit me in the jaw. I was shot from about, maybe we're figuring it a long distance, because the bullet actually had flipped end over end, kind of like a field goal kick, and wound up going into my face backwards.
Ew.
And the back of my jaw, it actually plowed through the left side of my teeth, and then it stopped in the back of my jaw backwards. And I remember it hit me, and everything went black, and I went down, and I remember everything kind of came back, and I was on my knees, and I remember when I was shot, I was on my stomach, and I didn't know this, but I guess the bullet had so much force that it actually lifted me up off the ground and snapped me back. It was a 7.62 round, which is the equivalent of a 30-06 hunting rifle.
Ooh.
So, yeah, a pretty big bullet. But then I was awake after that, and I crawled a hole in the ground where the bullets couldn't get me, and my combat medic and my first sergeant came over and carried me about, well, we kind of walked/carried me. I sandbagged them for about 400 yards down the side of the mountain, and then we had to wait for the shooting to stop, and it wasn't stopping, and I didn't know that they were afraid, and I was afraid that I was going to bleed out, because, you know, you get yourself to safety, well, now you're still bleeding out. There's nobody there to save you or close you up, because you're in the middle of a desert and the helicopter can't land because you're still in a conflict. So we sent the F-18 Tomcats overhead, and they dropped about 8,000 pounds worth of JNAM bombs on them. And now the guys who got me are not in one place, but several. And then the helicopter landed, and they sent me up into the Charlie Med area over at Fob Shank, which is way down from where we were, and that's where it all gets fuzzy. And I kind of pass in and out from there, and then I remember waking up in Charlie Med, and they were putting stuff in my ID and asked me if I could call anybody, and I remember writing my wife's phone number down, and then I passed out again, and then I woke up and I was in Germany. Fell asleep again, and I woke up, and I was in San Antonio, Texas, and it was about 8 days later, or 6 days later, excuse me.
Jesus.
And then that's when the real work starts, man. It sounds weird when I say it every time I say it, but getting shot was the easy part. Everything else that came after was hard. I had to learn how to, first off, they gave me a trach and a Dobhob feeding tube that went up into my nose, down to my stomach. They cut my throat open and gave me a trach for an airway. And, I had so many IVs in me that my veins collapsed after about 7 days of being in the ICU. And, I was in the hospital for about 18 days, with everything, with the Afghanistan and Germany. I think it was about 20 some days. I'm not exactly sure the exact number. And, I remember waking up, and I think the first thing I saw was my wife. Which is a good thing to see. Mm-hmm. And, remembering that I couldn't talk, so I had to write everything down, for the first couple days. And so I was, it was really kind of weird to kind of be in that position. And, you know, I don't think I'll ever kind of get used to that being the way it was. But, the doctors did a phenomenal job at Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio. They did 10 facial reconstructive surgeries on me there over 2 years. I just actually had my last one this last April. And, I have a procedure tomorrow morning, actually, to set everything up to get my my permanent implant in my face so I can have teeth again on the bottom left side of my face, which is exciting. Like I said, learning how to walk again and talk again and just kind of everything that you kind of take for granted, reading and saying words, is something that really is kind of weird when you don't know how, when you try it, you know, like your brain kind of gets what you're supposed to say. And then when you go for the action, it doesn't work. And, that was probably the most frustrating part. And walking again. Walking again was, I don't have the words to describe that. It's just, unless you go through it, there's no way to describe knowing how to do something and then not being able to do it. So.
Real miraculous story, Ben, just the recovery aspect of it. You know, being able to sit here and talk to you about just professional wrestling right now tonight is honestly kind of breathtaking when we actually think about it. And I got to ask your perspective before we move on and talk wrestling, I guess. When you look back at that and just realize how short ago that was, what's that like for you just realizing that, you know, the same thing that we're thinking, that you're on the phone right now and we're trying to discuss pro wrestling. You're able to do this after experiencing something so traumatic just a couple of years ago.
Oh, man. I don't know. You know, I've never been a lucky person, with the exception of a couple of scratch-off tickets here and there. But it's humbling, to be honest with you, because there's a lot of guys that didn't make it that were better men than me, and I'll freely admit were better men than me, and who deserved what I have right now, to be quite honest with you, more than me. And, I think that's a big reason that I want to, it's almost like there is no more, there's no other way to say it than, this is a second chance for me to live my life right and be a better person and do all the things that I was pretty much getting wrong the first time around. And, I try to take it upon myself to make sure that I do the best I can with this life that I have now, because, I feel like I have to do as much as I can with it for the guys who didn't come back, because I know that if they had the chance, they would. And I almost feel like I would be disrespecting them and dishonoring their memory by not trying to do everything I could to live my life and be happy and just trying to be a better person in general.
Oh, you got involved with Wisconsin Pro Wrestling back in November with their Wounded Warrior benefit show. How was that for you, coming back to something you loved, and now you can actually help those who've gone through the same thing as you?
That was a really special night. It really was. I was nervous, which is weird because I'm usually never nervous around a wrestling crowd, but I was nervous that I think it's because of what the Freedom Cup means. And the fact that the proceeds go to the right places. This next year, hopefully we can get it done for the a great organization that really helped me out, which was called Nation of Patriots, which is actually located right here in Wisconsin, in Madison. And it's an actual, and just to take a really quick time out to tell you about them, they're an organization that gives money to vets that are transitioning from being in the Army to being out of the Army. Because the problem is there's a huge gap and delay in getting your VA compensation when you're a wounded veteran from your Army pay. And your Army pay is not a lot. It's literally the least amount of money they need to give you. And it's very hard to live off of when you have a wife and, at that time, three kids. Nation of Patriots stepped in and they helped us out. And kind of saved the day. And they're a great organization. They take an American flag and they go through all lower 48 states, continental 48 states, and over 100 days they stop at they do a motorcycle rally ride, starting in Madison, Wisconsin, going down to Woodstock, Illinois, and then from there going all across the country in 100 days. And they raise proceeds. And they raised over $100,000 last year. for wounded veterans and their families. And, you know, they're planning on raising more this next year. And they helped me. I was able to be a speaker there 2 years ago. And this last year I've went to the last three. I plan on going to every single one I can until I'm not here anymore. I think they're, you know, as far as Wisconsin has to offer, they're the best nonprofit organization for veterans that we have. And I definitely feel like they need all the support that we can give them. So hopefully next year's Freedom Cup will be for them. But like I said, that night was really special. I remember not even, like, I remember going to the ring and I blanked. I had actually written down, like, this huge speech of what I wanted to say. And I don't want to say I rehearsed it, but I kind of remembered all the bullet points. And I remember I stepped in through the ropes and I looked at the people and I completely shut down. I lost it. I blanked completely. And I just was like, well, I remember looking down at the mat and I was like, oh, well, I'm going to have to wing this one. And I had to give the best speech that I could. It was a great time. It was a lot of fun. The guys busted their asses and there's some really great matches that night. And, you know, WCW, to their credit, is the only company in the state that does anything for veterans. And I think that's awesome and terrible at the same time, because I think that it's not a lot to ask the companies across the state to take one show and do something for the people who have done so much for our country. And not just for me. I'm not just talking me. I'm talking for every veteran in the state of Wisconsin and across the country. I mean, if you donate to Wounded Warrior Project, they're a global organization. You know, if you donate to Nation of Patriots, that's a local organization. You're helping the veterans that are immediately in your area. And I think that's something that we definitely need to do more of.
Definitely. I mean, to your credit, too, I'll say this, is that I remember being at the show where you gave the speech for the Freedom Cup. And, I mean, from the back, I could barely tell that you blanked on anything. And I think what helped, too, is that there were so many people in the crowd that were there to support you, and, you know, they were proud of everything that you had done, and they were so appreciative of you taking your time to come talk to them. So I think in the time that you were trying to wing something, I think the crowd was, you know, just overwhelming just with all that applause and cheer for you, that I remember being in the back and I was like, I don't think there was even like an awkward moment. So to your credit, I mean, for me in the back, it didn't even sound like you had any trouble giving a speech. So
I think what helped was that I'm just, it's something that's really near and dear to me. So I think it was one of those situations where I kind of lucked out, because it was really easy to find the words. So
absolutely. So so for a while, your last match was against Sadus at GLCW. So tell us a little bit about that match with Sadus.
Oh, that was 4 years in the making. He called me, and I think the first time we talked about it, I was still in the hospital. and he just sat on the phone. He goes, we're going to get a match. He said, you're going to get through all this. You're going to get better, and we're going to wrestle. And I just remember him telling me that on the phone and saying to myself, okay, that's the goal. That's the physical-wise, and with everything that I have, that's the goal, is to be able to wrestle at least one more time. And, you know, I can remember getting the clear bill of health early in 2014. I actually want to say the summer 2014 in August. And I kind of shopped around to the idea to a couple places. And, you know, not to badmouth anybody, but nobody was really that interested. And it was kind of, you know, I think a lot of it was there were, you know, I don't want to see. Now this is where it gets hard, because I don't want to step on any toes, but I want to tell the truth. I think they looked at me as too much of a risk, and I completely understand that, you know, and I don't fault them for that. You know, obviously everybody's got to protect their product and put on the best show they can. The one guy, the last person I reached out to was the person I thought would say no, not because he's a bad guy or anything, but just because it was such a big show, and I reached out to Dave Hero. And I knew that at that time, I think he had like two shows, he had one more show before Blizzard Brawl. And in my head, I was hoping for that one, which was like in October. Mm-hmm. And I remember I messaged him on Facebook, and out of nowhere, he just said, hey, come wrestle for me at Blizzard Brawl. And I just remember reading it and thinking that I read it wrong, you know, and having to read it like more than once. And, you know, and then all of a sudden this next message pops up, and it's him telling me, anything you want. You can wrestle whoever you want, take as much time as you want, tell any story you want, it's all you. He goes, I totally understand where you're coming from, let's do it. And you know, and then from there it just snowballed, and it got so big. It got bigger than I ever thought it was going to. And I have to thank Dave Hero. He's been an awesome friend ever since I came back, and has been just one hell of a stand-up guy. And, you know, I love that guy to death. He's a great guy. I think that he's done such a wonderful thing for the state of Wisconsin, for the professional wrestling scene. That now that Blizzard Brawl is being turned over to someone else, it's kind of sad because he is, you know, I always felt like Dave did such a great job. But, you know, I wish him the best in everything he's doing. But getting back to the match with Sadist, I remember I called Steve and I told him, hey, we have Blizzard Brawl if we want it. And he didn't believe me. We kind of had this 20-minute conversation where he was like, no, you're ribbing me, right? Like, this is bullshit. And I was like, no, he said we can do it. And I think we kind of made the plan there that day that we were going to just tell this epic story of what would really happen if a guy who had been gone for 4.5 years came back. And 4.5 years ago, it was great. But came back after 4.5 years with this traumatic injury and with all the odds against him, and takes on this unbelievably talented, scary, powerful monster that has literally wreaked havoc since he's been gone. And it was such a great story to have. We got so lucky with it. And Dave Hero pulled out all the stops. He had Mean Gene Okerlund get in on the story with me and Steve and interview us twice before the show. I remember we got to the back and he's like, hey, Ricky Steamboat wants to talk to you. Me and Steve kind of looked at each other like, what? And we walked over and Ricky Steamboat goes, are you the veteran? And I said, yeah. He goes, sit down. He goes, is this who you're wrestling? And Steve's like, yeah, that's me. And he's like, sit down. And he sits us down and he goes, all right, so tell me about this match. And we literally got to sit down with Ricky Steamboat for about half an hour and talk over our entire match, front to finish, and got all of his critiques and everything he thought we should do. And we did change some stuff because he's Ricky fucking Steamboat. So when Ricky Steamboat tells you something, you listen. But it just got so huge. And I remember being being really emotional before I came out. And I actually was like, I was almost going to lose it just to get out because I couldn't believe that we had actually gotten to that point and this was actually going to happen. And I remember walking out, and the crowd was just awesome. And they were everything I wanted them to be. And we got into the match, and we tried to tell this story. And I think I've had a lot of people come up and be like, God, that was the best match. That was so awesome. And I've had other people come up to me and be like, man, you just got beat up a lot. It was good, but you got beat up a lot. I think the story we were trying to tell was, you know, it was almost like Rocky versus Ivan Drago from Rocky IV. Like, yeah. Of course I'm going to get my ass kicked. The guy, you know, outweighs me by 80 pounds and has me by almost 6 inches and is a frickin' monster, you know? And he's at the top of his game. He's in the pinnacle of his career. Like, of course I'm going to struggle to survive for the majority of the match. And the whole point of my guy was to just basically throw out every bomb I had until, you know, I either A, got lucky or got my ass beat. And it was a great story. And it was a lot of fun. And I remember I was really happy with it. And I remember the match got over and I just couldn't help myself. And I broke down. And I've never broke down in the middle of it before. I completely lost it. They had my daughters come in, which was really special. We got to kind of say goodbye to the crowd. And to be honest with you, I thought that was it. I thought I was done right then and there. And I felt like I kind of cleaned out the basement and I found my piece that I needed. Steve came to the back and we had this huge hug and he was crying and I'm crying and Dave Hero comes up and he's crying. We're all crying. A bunch of grown ass men crying in the back. And my son comes up to me. He's 11 at the time and he's bawling his eyes out. And it's like, Dad, I can't believe you did so good. That's really special to you. It was just awesome. I feel so lucky to just have that, you know, my wife, you know, allowing me to go do that because I wasn't going to do it unless I had her support. And I couldn't have done it without my wife, Crystal, giving me that support and telling me that I should go do this and that it was good. And then Steve, you know, Steve Sadist, I mean, can't ask for a better dance partner. You really can't. To this day, I think he's the most talented guy I think I've ever been in the ring with. And for a big man, he wrestles like, he's just this weird hybrid, man. It's like he can tech wrestle if he wants to. He can go to the air if he wants to. He can chain wrestle with you if he needs to. He can outpower you. And he's just such a great guy to wrestle with. And I look forward to hopefully maybe someday doing it again. But it was really special. It was a great moment. And everything was good. And I didn't expect to do anything after that. I remember I woke up the next day, or a couple days later, and I got a text message from Dave Furlow, and all it said was, watch my 24 at 10 o'clock. This is the following Saturday. And all of a sudden, Steve gets a hold of me and he goes, dude, they put our match on TV. And I was like, what? And Dave Furlow had actually taken our match from Blizzard Brawl, and he has that show with Damian Nelson, the Pro Wrestling Report. And the entire episode was our match in its entirety. And for me, that's so special just because I don't remember the last time an independent wrestling match was on television. That wasn't public access. And that was just awesome for me. And like I said, that was kind of like the dream come true. It was everything I ever wanted it to be. So I should be happy, you know.
So one thing I wanted to also bring up as well is that, so on top of being able to sit down with Ricky Steamboat and talk about your match, I mean, back actually just this past season in fall, you got a chance to talk with Bret Hart, who called you a walking miracle. Are you still riding the cloud nine high about that?
Oh, come on, man. As a kid growing up, a lot of guys have their favorites. For me, it was Bret Hart. And I thought, and I remember being a kid, I was about 7 years old, and I remember seeing Bret Hart for the first time. This is when he split from Jim and went to the singles, and all of a sudden, for the first time ever, there was actually somebody that I liked besides Hulk Hogan, and he wore pink, and it's like, he can wear pink and still beat people up and make them tap out. Like, you gotta be a monster badass to be able to do that, and to meet him was phenomenal. I took my daughter with me, who's a big Bret Hart fan, thank God. Mm-hmm. And we got to meet him, and it was everything I hoped it would be. I mean, he was such a nice guy, and he was very honest, and it was just really neat because, he could have just, there was a line, we were second in line, and there was probably about 300 people behind us, and he sat there and talked to me for 10 minutes and didn't give a crap about how long the line was. He wanted me to make sure that me meeting him was worth the money that was paid to do it, and you got to respect a guy like that. And we were going to leave, and the best part was we go to leave, and they pull out his glasses, which they hadn't had out yet. And I'm talking about the old ones that he used to put on kids.
Yeah.
And my daughter goes, oh my God, Dad, it's his glasses. And Bret, out of the corner of his eye, sees her do this. And like, we've already turned our backs. We're walking away. And I was like, yeah, honey, I know. They're pretty cool, huh? And he goes, hey, come here. He goes, hey, sweetheart, come here. And my daughter turns around. He goes, what's your name again? And she said, Verona. And he signs the glasses, and I shit you not, puts them on my kid's head like you used to do with the kids in the front row.
Wow, nice.
And I'm telling you right now that the only way it would have been any better is if it would have been me. But it just reaffirmed to me that he was the hero that I was always meant to cheer. And I'll never forget that. And my daughter still talks about that to this day. It's still the coolest memory. And, well, we have the network, and it's always, Dad, can we watch some Bret Hart? It's never, can we watch network? And she hates old school stuff, she says, but if it's Bret Hart, it's okay. And so now my youngest, one of my younger daughters, who's two, she likes Bret Hart now, and she calls Bret Hart her boo, because she can't say Bret Hart, she's only two. So she goes, my boo, Daddy, my boo. And I have to explain to her someday what a boo means in our culture today. But now she's a Bret Hart fan, so hopefully the trend continues. It's pretty neat.
Well, hopefully boo, in the future actually just means Bret Hart,
Oh, one more time, I'm sorry.
Oh, maybe, boo in the future actually just mean Bret Hart. You won't use it for a loved one. You just use it for Bret Hart.
Yeah, there you go. Well, it'd be neat. To meet him again would be awesome. I'd do it in RV. But it was really awesome, and I remember it was the first time that I actually had a chance to go meet him. The only other time I had a chance, he was coming to San Antonio, Texas, when I was down there yet. And I moved up to Wisconsin 10 days before his signing was in San Antonio. So I just missed him. So it was pretty neat that he was only about 2 hours away from my house this last summer. So
That is definitely really cool, Ben. We're kind of running out of time a little bit, but we do want to make sure that we talk a little bit about you coming back and, you know, what's next for you, I guess. So, I mean, if you care to just kind of fill us in, I guess, on, you know, that wasn't necessarily your last moment in wrestling, and, I mean, what you're hoping to do, I guess, here in the future with wrestling.
You know, I went back to my doctor's in the fall of this year. I want to say it was September. And just kind of, like, figuring they would be like, yeah, you know, that was great that you did that one time, but dude, I want to have you do that ever again. And expecting to get the hard no and the, you know, I'm glad you enjoyed it, but you're not going to do it again kind of a thing. And I remember I talked to my doctor, and he goes, so what are you talking about here? And I kind of told him that what I wanted to do. And, you know, I kind of gotten, I don't want to say I gotten the itch, but I looked at all the talent that's in the state, and I was like, man, I could really do something special with these guys if I could be cleared to do it. And so I talked to my doctors and everything, and he kind of looked at me and goes, well, I'd much rather have you do that than play, like, semi-pro football or some craziness like that. And I said, so is that a yes? And he goes, yeah, you can go back and do that. I don't see why not. So I saw my neurologists, and I saw my my facial people, and I saw all the people that I needed to see, and it was it just kind of snowballed like I didn't expect it to. And the next thing I know, But the next thing I know, I got all the yeses I needed to come back, which was kind of weird and overwhelming. And then I went to my wife and really expected a great big no. Like, you're not going to go do this again kind of a thing. And she said, well, if it's going to make you happy, then do it. And I knew where I was kind of welcomed and where I wasn't. And this was, and I remember I went for my last test in, or right after the Freedom Cup, just to make absolutely sure that everything was good. And at the Freedom Cup, I had talked to the people there about doing something again and talked to WPW. And they were like, hey, man, you want to come back? Let us know. Let's get it done. And everything kind of just fell in place and worked out. And now here in a couple weeks, I'll be wrestling Brock Hall at New Year's Resolutions up in De Pere for Baba Louie's for WPW, and I'm just excited. I think it's a lot different this time than the last time I wrestled. I think it has a lot more to do with progressing young guys and kind of doing good stuff with them while bringing storytelling matches back. I think we've kind of fallen into a generation where it's kind of like easier to not for all wrestlers, but for some wrestlers, I think it's easier to do flashy moves and look cool than it is to tell an honest story. And I'm looking to do that. So I'm excited for it. I'm excited to wrestle a lot of guys. AC Riley, I'm pretty sure I'll see you down the road sometime.
Looking forward to it.
I feel bad for you already.
Oh, boy.
but other than that, I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And we'll see where it goes from there. For right now, my focus is WPW. I don't really plan on going anywhere else or doing anything else in the immediate future. You know, as far as things later on, you know, it would have to be the right opportunity, and it would have to be for the right company, and you know, a lot of things would have to kind of, you know, I don't just want to get back into it and just do the daily grind like I used to. I'd rather do stuff that's meaningful, and then that's what I'm looking to do, so.
Absolutely. So that kind of leads into my question that I was going to ask. So so you're going to stick to WPW for the moment, but I mean, WPW at this point is, you know, wrestling, you know, having, you know, one show a month, sometimes even two shows a month. So for you, is it the goal to just kind of get back into the swing of wrestling as much as you can? Or are you trying to just, you know, for now, wrestle just a few times, you know, over the course of the year and just kind of see how it goes? Or is it kind of a mix of both?
I think it's a little bit of a mix of both. You know, I'm looking at slowly getting into it from now until the spring, and I think in about 4 months I'll kind of evaluate where I'm at and see how my body is handling everything. You know, I want to make sure that, you know, the recovery time from each match isn't bad. You know, because I mean, you're going to be sore and stiff and things like that every time you wrestle. But I want to make sure, you know, it's not going to be worth it to me if, you know, I wrestle on a Saturday and 3 weeks later I have another match and I'm finally feeling better 3 days before the next one. You know, I'm not looking for that or anything, but, you know, if I can heal up well after every match and I feel good enough and my face holds up, which I've been pretty much assured from my doctors that it should, you know, I think that doing a lot more stuff after the first 4 months would be feasible. But like I said, it has to be the right situation. I'm not just going to go and wrestle for a company just to go wrestle. I want to go and I want to tell a story and I want to wrestle, you know, against people that we can have good matches and make a good and make the product better and make, you know, stories that resonate with people. I don't just want to be that guy who's like, yeah, I just want to wrestle wherever I can and get all the stuff. You know, that's for you young guys. You know, I'm not that young of a guy anymore. I would rather, you know, I've granted there's nothing wrong with doing that, and I highly recommend it for anybody who's young. But I think once you get it in past 10 years, it's kind of, you know, and being the family guy that I am, I'm not looking to be away from my family every weekend. But like I said, we'll see how it goes. I don't want to make any guarantees that I can't back up. But at the same time, you know, for right now, WWE is my sole focus.
So January 23rd is your first match back, and I guess first match of 2016 against Brock Hall, Baba Louis. Where else can people see you coming up this month?
That one's the only one. Possibly in Two Rivers the next weekend. Maybe we'll see. But that's the only time you can check me out for January. Like I said, I'm just gonna do a couple matches here to get into the swing of things and see how everything goes. You know, I don't wanna overdo anything and kind of shoot myself in the foot before getting out of the starting gate, kind of a deal. But as for right now, that's where you can see me. You can see me once a month there for the first couple months of the year, and then after that, maybe you'll see me in other places, different states, things like that.
Hey Ben, you know it's been an honor and a privilege to have you on again for Grapple Talk here. We'll probably catch you down the road sometime. Best of luck with everything going on in 2016, and hopefully a happy and healthy year for you and your family.
I really appreciate that. You guys take care and stay frosty.
That's Ben McCoy here on Grapple Talk. Stick around for more. We'll be right back. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, fellow bar patrons. This is the Ring of Honor top prospect, the Beer City Bruiser, Matt Winchester.
And the Beer City Bruiser, no slouch. Many regional titles, came here with a reputation.
And you're listening to Grapple Talk.
Tune into the Indie Power Rankings reveal every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio, Filling the Void Radio Network. You can also subscribe to Filling the Void Radio Network on iTunes. Give a follow to the Indie Power Rankings on Twitter at Indie Power Ranking, no GS. Instagram at Indie Power Rankings. On Facebook, facebook.com/IndiePowerRankings. You can also go to the website where you can see the top 10 for the week, the tag team top 5, anything else independent wrestling related, indiepowerrankingsipr.wordpress.com.
Hi, this is the Minnesota Madman, Doug Meyer, host of the wrestling podcast on the DVM Podcast Empire.
One Ball Radio.
We recap Raw, NXT, Ring of Honor, and other shows of the week. We interview wrestlers, go back in time with this week in wrestling history, and we go, hey, whatever happened to? Check us out on iTunes or DVMPE.com.
For the latest pro wrestling news, keep it locked to www.gerweck.net, Gerwick.net, pro wrestling since 1997.
What's up, guys? It's one of three of your favorite wrestling podcast hosts, AC Riley from Grapple Talk here. Are you a listener or even a host of another podcast and you just don't know how to get the word out about the podcast? Send us a promo advertising what your show is about to grappletalkpodcast@gmail.com. And if you're not a podcast host, but maybe something independent wrestling that you're looking to get the word on about, shoot us an email with your promo as well. We don't discriminate. Let's face it, it's tough for the small guys to get the word out. So what better way than to band together with fellow small guys, aka advertising on a podcast? It's that easy to do. Just send a promo to grappletalkpodcast@gmail.com and we'll make sure people know about you, your podcast, or maybe something else related to independent wrestling. Hopefully you're enjoying the show. And as always, support independent wrestling.
Hey, this is the real Brock Hall. You want to get your reality check? Check out Grapple Talk.
Ryan Yanishadis here from the Ringside Report to remind you to watch the Ringside Report every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6 p.m. on YouTube. Brandon McGrath and I discuss WWE, TNA, and the local independent scene. Go to youtube.com/RB Enterprises. That is the Ringside Report, your front row seat to all things wrestling.
Pro Wrestling Roundtable Slam. PWR Slam. Every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio on the Evolution Radio Network, 9 Eastern, 8 Central Standard. PWR Slam, leading the pro wrestling radio revolution with a new evolution by bringing you the stars of yesterday, the stars of today, and the stars of tomorrow, and all the other news and happenings you need to know in the world of professional wrestling. Find us on Facebook, PW Roundtable, or on Twitter, PWR Slam. See you Wednesdays.
What's up, guys? This is professional wrestler Rennie D.
And this is Travis Dirty Mester.
We're the hosts of The Pencil, the professional wrestling podcast every Tuesday.
On iTunes, YouTube, Podbean, and Stitcher.
We bring you guests from the WWE, TNA, and all the major independent wrestling promotions around the world.
Follow us on Twitter at Pencil Podcast or on the World Wide Web, pencilpodcast.com.
This is Stacey Shadows.
We've said it numerous times that Stacey Shadows is one bad bitch.
And you're listening to Grapple Talk, the best indie wrestling podcast right now known to man.
We got to thank Ben McCoy for sitting down with us for a second time here on Grapple Talk. Hopefully we can get him on again sometime later down the road in 2016 and catch up with him, see how getting back into wrestling is going for him.
Time restraints suck. I mean, we had him on for a pretty long time, got to tell his story. Definitely wanted to dive in a little deeper between, you know, his match with Sadus and what's been going on now. But, you know, we have time, you know. If we want to be able to do this every single week, we got to make sure that we meet our times. Otherwise, we can't. And but then, you know, big kudos for Ben to come on and really talk about
that.
Did
you say big cooters?
Big kudos.
I thought you said cooters.
I heard kudos.
Big kudos to Ben.
I don't know. I heard cooters.
You are tired. You really are tired.
Really are tired.
I really am.
You know, big kudos for him to come on and talk about that. I know it's not the easiest thing to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just really cool for him to come on. I mean, when his phone crapped out last time. We said it, you know, we needed to get him back on, and definitely really happy that we had the chance to talk to him again.
And it was great, too, that it was a mutual thing where, you know, it wasn't just that we wanted to get him on, but he wanted to be back on, because I remember at one of the shows, he came up to me and was like, hey, man, when are we doing this interview? I'm like, yeah, we got to get that set up. So, I mean, I'm glad it was able to finally work out, and we were able to talk to him again, because it's always great talking to Ben.
All right, cool. So one of the things we do here at Grapple Talk at the end of every year, most like everyone else, you know, we have year-end awards.
Yeah.
We actually like to give out hardware that we don't actually physically give out, because mm-hmm. we don't actually make trophies.
We don't.
I don't even know anyone that actually makes trophies.
We basically put a picture up with a graphic on it that says you won an award. So
yeah.
I think
we tag you
on
Facebook.
Yeah, it's more of a social media plug than it is a physical award we can hand you.
Mm-hmm. You think we can actually get awards one of these days?
I mean, once we start maybe getting some money for sponsors, I mean,
that's never going to happen. Okay, yeah. Let's go right into the awards, because that's exactly why you guys are still with us. All right, we're going to kick off. This is not in the order, guys, of like, you know, least to most important, because all these awards are very important, because
mm-hmm.
we're fucking Grapple Talk,
right.
And we take ourselves very serious
yeah.
all the time. All right, let's go right away with the social media award. That was actually voted on by you. That's right, the fans. You blew us up on the Facebooks and Twitters. And he voted for 7-star wrestling.
And that got the most votes out of everything. There was a lot of certain wrestlers, managers, promoters, tag teams that got a lot of votes. And 7-star wrestling was just the one that everybody was in, had the most common votes. And so 7-star wrestling got the most votes. And as a result, they are the social media star of the 2015 year.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something.
Moving on along, we're going to let's do workhorse of the year. After a deliberation, we decided to give Brock Hall, the real Brock Hall, this award. Just because simply, you know, we see this guy at multiple events. He's always willing to put the ring up, tear the ring down. And I think Jesse had the best way of saying it. He's one of those guys that never bitches about it, which is great.
Oh.
I mean, you'll sit there and walk up to him after a hard night of wrestling, and he'll be tearing down the ring, and he's still the coolest guy. You know, as cool as the other side of the pillow, I think, is the popular
nice.
The coin term.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely well-deserving for Brock Hall to get that workhorse award. And keep up the good work, man, because
sky's the limit for him right now, I think, right here in Wisconsin.
You know, speaking of Brock Hall, and we just had the interview with Ben McCoy, and Ben McCoy was one of the people this year that, you know, took time out of his day to be like, hey, I just want to give Brock Hall a shout-out because here's, you know, exactly what we were saying. Here's a guy that, you know, first to leave, you know, first to show up, last to leave, excuse me. But he's the first to show up. He's the last to leave. He's, you know, going, you know, he was in Wisconsin, North Dakota, Illinois, Minnesota, you name it. Like, he's going all over the place. He's putting in the work. And he's not one of those guys, like I said, you know, when we were deliberating, that he's trying to protect his spot. He's, you know, trying to get as many people, you know, to get some work as he is. So, I mean, that's a definition of a workhorse. Another match here is a breakout star.
You mean another award?
Did I say another match?
Yeah, you did.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Another award, excuse me, is breakout star. And we gave this one to Matt Cage because here's a guy that, you know, was already getting a lot of work in the area. And just like Brock Hall, you know, he's gone all over the Midwest. But, I mean, he had a really tough experience here in the 2015 year where he came out as an openly gay wrestler. And I mean, it's one thing to just do that, and you have to, you break it to your parents and break it to everyone around you. But I mean, it was one thing to do that, but on top of that, you know, it was getting picked up by, you know, national wrestling articles, and he was getting all this exposure, which he didn't ask for. He was just being true to himself. And I think his stock has just been rising, not because he broke the news to that, but still just the fact that he was getting picked up because he was just on the top of his game.
I thought you were going to say he was getting picked up because he was a gay guy.
That's definitely not what I was going with at all. But, you know, Matt Cage, he's definitely the breakout star 2015 in our opinion. And, you know, it's going to be nowhere but up for this guy as well.
Definitely. It just proves that hard work, determination, and being true to yourself pays off in the end.
Absolutely, 100%.
All right, cool. One of the most disputed categories last year was Rookie of the Year. I know a lot of people were upset we didn't pick Colin Brooks.
Not a lot of people.
I think it was mostly
one
Colin
person
Brooks
that was upset about that.
Mm-hmm. So this year we had to go with a young gal out of Milwaukee. Her name's Sierra. She kind of really burst onto the scene down there in Brew City Wrestling. Won their women's championship and really kind of put her name out there. Somebody you want to watch out for in the upcoming year and, you know, down the road as well.
I think it's fantastic as well because, I mean, we've talked with Sierra. She's got a great head on her shoulders. She's very humble when it comes to the wrestling business. And it just when you talk with you guys like Frankie DeFalco, Matt Winchester, essentially responsible for training Sierra, you know, nobody has a bad thing to say about, you know, her work ethic, you know everything that involved with wrestling. She's doing the best that she can be doing. And yeah, it was pretty much a very easy decision.
Speaking of keeping a lookout for this year, we have a new award that we're giving out. We're calling it the Lookout For Award, and we're using that as an opportunity to hand it over to Mario Andrew Cavello. Guy's been around for a couple years, quite a while actually, but we really think in talking about it that 2016 might be the year of the Mac. Just won the ACW Heavyweight Championship, and every time the guy's in the ring, he puts on... great match after great match. He has, in my opinion, one of the best gimmicks I've seen in Wisconsin. And I really think, personally, and I know in talking with you guys, we definitely think Mario Andrew Cavello has what it takes to be one of the best, if not the best, in Wisconsin. So that's why we believe that he should be definitely, watched over, I guess, this next upcoming year, and why he's getting the lookout for award. Here in Grapple Talk.
Absolutely. Tag Team of the Year we're giving to the Viking War Party. This was something we had a little bit of deliberation on as well, just because there's so many hot tag teams in the Midwest. But mm-hmm. The Viking War Party really stood up because, you know, here's guys that are literally on the road every weekend, whether it's all three of them as a group, whether it's two of them and then another one's off to a different show. I mean, these guys are always working. They're always putting in the effort. And on top of that, they're not just working all across Midwest. They're wrestling all over the nation. Like, I mean, you know, being friends with a couple of them on Facebook and seeing them share, you know, what states they've been in, and that's completely filled up, and it's all because of wrestling. So, I mean, it was really a no-brainer with the guys like the Viking War Party to get this award. So, you know, Tag Team of the Year, Viking War Party.
Yeah, definitely. They travel from state to state in their long boat, basically raping and pillaging every promotion they go to.
Yikes.
Congrats to the Viking War Party on winning the Grapple Talk Tag Team of the Year. All right, we're moving on to Woman of the Year. And this one's always a very, very tough one because there's so many good women's wrestlers now on the independent circuit. Mm-hmm. You're seeing just like independent women's companies popping up. And we had to give it to someone who's really had a great year in 2015, and that is Stacy Shadows.
Yeah, Stacy's been around, you know, for the past couple of years. I would say she's been around even before, you know, the whole the woman wrestling explosion thing kind of happened. And she, like we've talked about 100 times, she's able to go toe-to-toe with some of the best guys in the area, in the Midwest. And, you know, definitely think she's very deserving of Woman of the Year because, you know, she's one bad bitch. And nobody embodies that more than Stacy Shadows, especially here in the Midwest.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, it's. I think 2016 will definitely be your year because, I mean, here, you know, 2015, she had a great year. Nobody's, you know, arguing that. But, I mean, I think 2016, I wouldn't be surprised if Ring of Honor starts using her on a more consensuous basis.
Next award, we're going to do Feud of the Year. This one also very, talked about this one over
this
quite
a tough.
Bit. This was tough. Yep. We decided to go with Joey the Jet Avalon and Sadist. Had a series of matches last year, guys. It seemed like every single time we heard about it or we saw it, it was a match of the year candidate described by many others that saw it. So,
fans and wrestlers alike.
Fans and wrestlers. Everybody loves seeing Joey the Jet Avalon taking on Sadist. As we said, we talked to wrestlers, promoters, fans, everybody that saw these two guys go head-to-head was like, well, this is the best, you know, match I've seen all year long, or this will be the best match. So, you know, guys put on a clinic every time they meet each other in the ring, and I'm sure this we'll see quite a bit more of those two coming up here in 2016.
That feud continues also for BCW on January 15th, Rise to Honor 12. Cheap plug for Avalon and Sadist. But, yeah, they're going to be going toe-to-toe one more time to bring in the new year.
All right, cool. It's our last award, guys. You know, got to think back to, you know, 2015 and just how good of a year it was for one particular wrestler in the, I would say, in the Midwest. And that guy was Matt Winchester.
Yeah, Matt Winchester had a phenomenal year, obviously, really taking stage in Ring of Honor and being, you know, one of the best young and up-and-coming talents that they have on that roster right now, being able to travel all over the nation, you know, and still sticking to his roots, though. I mean, still knowing where he's from, Matt Winchester, huge supporter of the podcast as well. So, you know, definitely think he's very well-deserving of the 2015 Wrestler of the Year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things where, I mean, you know, here he started out with Ring of Honor, with the top prospect tournament, and you look at that, and then now you look at now where, you know, Ring of Honor is like, hey, we want you to start filming vignettes, we want you to start doing more video promos and everything like that, which means that the Ring of Honor is taking more of an interest to him, meaning that, you know, his stock is just rising and rising with Ring of Honor, which meant that 2015 was a great year for him. You know, he got to do a lot of tag team feuds with War Machine, tagging up with Silas Young, which are always guaranteed to be great matches. You know, on top of that, he's still finding time to train the BCW class for wrestling over in the Milwaukee area. I mean, he's getting work. I mean, you know, he's a great guy, great wrestler, and really not a lot of bad things you can say about Matt Winchester.
Oh, definitely. He can drink a lot of beer, too. All right, so those are the awards this year. You know, we'll be back next year for 2016 awards, you know, if everything works out, you know. You know, closing comments, NC Riley.
Just want to make sure that we give a plug out to Indie Power Rankings. They had their top 100 list just this last week to wrap up the 2015 year. Had a lot of great interviews in the three-day span. Obviously, we didn't have an episode last week, so we couldn't talk to Travis about the, you know, interviews itself, and we'd obviously catch it in the middle of it. But, you know, a lot of great interviews on there. You can check it out. Just head over to Indie Power Rankings on Facebook, and they have the links there as well. And yeah, it's a very exciting time.
Yeah, they do a really, really good service for the independent wrestling community, getting a lot of names out there that maybe you never had a chance to hear of, but it's a great, great service. You guys give them a like on Facebook. All right, tape study this week. Just go out and watch Wrestle Kingdom 10, for fuck's sakes. Track it down. It's on Daily Motion. Hey, if Dustin's at your local show, pick it up from Dustin. I know he's going to have it on both DVD and Blu-ray. Man, that was a fantastic card from start and finish.
Definitely. I know you were talking about that quite a bit when it was happening. Good tape study. Definitely check that out.
And if you had to pick, like, three matches from that whole thing just to watch, Aishi against Sabata was just one of the sickest things I've ever seen when it came to physicality. Nakamura and Styles was beautiful. And Okada and Tanahashi, classic.
Now, one thing I was wondering, did you stay up early to watch it live?
No, actually, I got done with work. I had found the link. I sped home. I made a bowl of cereal. I watched it in bed, And I was just, like, jacked for the next, like, 5 hours. It really kind of sucked because it was about 11. And I'm just like, oh, man, wrestling, yeah. You know, and, like, I couldn't get back to sleep.
Nothing better than a bowl of cereal, bed, and wrestling.
Yeah, it was Raisin Bran Crunch, you know. Nah, so
there's a lot of things better than that, then, actually.
I do, man. It's good for the fiber.
Good for the poops, huh?
Yeah, good for the poops. All right, cool. Well, we'll be back next week. We'll decide how bad the hangover is after Wrestlepalooza. But all you wrestling fans out there, stay classy.
Thank you for tuning in to Grapple Talk.
All
right, I'll start things.
Squeaky.
Sounds like Lilar. Lilar and Stitch. Lilar. Ohana.
Jesus.
Ohana means family. You don't even know what I'm talking about, Jesse?
I've never seen this movie.
Oh.
With Nick Ragnar, A.C. Riley, and Jesse Von Ruden.
Wait, I would say the traditional one.
something like that. I don't know. Something
what was that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Beatboxing by A.C. Riley, not available
oh
in stores
gosh.
For good reason.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.